Welcome everyone to this week's edition of the Focus TV. This is season 5, episode 14. The highlights you saw to start the show were from a matchup between Archbishop Spalding and John Carroll. Cardell's going to have a little bit more on that later in tonight's show, but we're going to start with Octavia sharing her thoughts on, if you haven't heard, Super Bowls this week. So Octavia, without further ado, who you got?
I mean, first of all, it's sad the football season is coming to an end for me. I love football season. Even when my team sucks and I say I hate football season, I really do like it. But we have finally reached the end. Super Bowl Sunday is this Sunday, February 13th, at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California. The Rams versus the Cincinnati Bengals. There's a lot of good storylines in this game that you wouldn't have thought, just because, like, who would have thought that the Bengals would be here? Who, you know, we thought that the Rams could get here, but to see them actually here, you know, so it gives you a lot of good storylines. One thing that I'm looking forward to seeing is how Sean McVay basically kind of bounces back from the last Super Bowl he was in. You know, being an offensive guru that he is supposed to be, the wonder kid or whatever they call him nowadays. Totally put up 3 points in a Super Bowl game was not his best work. So I'm interested to see how his play calling changes. You know, he kind of gets a little excited. You can see how he is on the sideline. He gets excited like a kid. And it's crazy because, I mean, in football years, they would say he's a kid as far as a coach. But he's my age, so it's still kind of weird. So, you know, sometimes he gets a little overzealous. He tries to do too much. So it's going to be interesting to see how he works. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Zach Taylor is on the other side as well. Going from, I think they won 4 games last year into now being all the way at the Super Bowl with a team that they know, well, probably didn't think was all the way ready, which I'm pretty sure most of us thought that as well, outside of a couple of key pieces, obviously. Biggest rivalry or battle I'm looking forward to see is the Rams defensive line against the Bengals offensive line. So we know how bad their offensive line is, and we know how good the Rams defensive line is. I expect Aaron Donald to eat. I expect Von Miller to eat. And I'm interested to see if the Bengals are going to be able to do anything. Like, even though I don't think they can, but I'll be interested to see if they magically scheme up something to stop Aaron Donald. I hope they remember that at least 2 of them need to be over there. At least 2. Not just 1. At least 2 of them need to be over there. Even that might not even do anything. You know, let's keep it 100. So I'm just interested to see how that works out. I want to see if, you know, how we've seen Joe Burrow this in the pro season kind of escape most of it outside of the Tennessee game when he got sacked 9 times. But in the game against the Chiefs, you know, he looked like he was down for the count in a couple of those, but he was able to scramble out and make big plays for them. So I'm interested to see that. And then I really want to see how the weapons for both teams stack up. We know who the Rams' weapons are on the offensive side. Cooper Kupp, who had, you know, a franchise season. And Odell Beckham finally being able to get to a Super Bowl out of all the talent that he has and, you know, the bad years that he spent in New York and the obviously bad years he spent in Cleveland, to see how that works out. And even the others, you know, Van Jefferson, I like him. You know, his dad is a wide receiver coach for the Cardinals. So, you know, he has good technique and good pedigree. And he has stepped up a lot in the postseason as well for them. But then on the other side, like the youngins with, you know, T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase and, I mean, Joe Mixon and Tyler Boyd. Like, and then if they get Uzma back, who has, I believe, an MCL sprain from the Kansas City game. And to me, everything says that the Rams should win. They should. But I think the Bengals are going to win it. I don't know why. I don't have any rhyme or reason. It's just really a gut feeling that they did all of this and they're not ready to do all of this for nothing. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like they don't care what anybody else says. They have that, if you want to say, underdog mentality, even though they consider themselves underdogs. they don't believe anybody can beat them. Like, there was a quote Joe Burrow said, like, I mean, we lost to the second best team in our division. Like, when he was talking about the Chiefs at one point, like, called the Chiefs the second best team in their division. Like saying, like, we're the best in this division. Everybody else is beneath us. So, I mean, I just think they have that real strong mentality. And like we talked about earlier in the season or earlier in the postseason, they're young enough to not care. Like, they don't have anything to lose. They're playing with house money. They got to go out there at SoFi. And I just think it's just going to – I won't be surprised either way, honestly, but I'm going to pull for the Bengals. I think they'll get it done. But it's going to be – I hope it's going to be a good game. As good as their games have been recently, it's definitely looking like it should be. And then, of course, I want to see if Matthew Stafford doesn't throw an interception because, you know, he likes to do that. So that's all I got for it. It's just – I'm just ready to see a good game. And in the season off.
Yeah, and if you guys want a little bit more on to get some other takes on what we think might happen in this week's Super Bowl, get over to Roku Channel Now, NFL wrap-up show. The Super Bowl edition is up. Octavia, she had a spotlight all to herself this week to talk about it. The rest of us, we talked about it on Sunday night. You know, that said, going to move on to Cardell. High school segment. We started the show off with some highlights. Great game you attended. So, what was yours?
Yeah, it was a great Baltimore Catholic League, conference game. John Carroll went on the road to play Archbishop Spalding. Archbishop Spalding right now is second in the conference behind St. Francis. John Carroll was actually picked to win the conference during the preseason, but you know, injuries, obviously, COVID situations and whatnot. The key players, they got off to a slow start, but they're starting to ramp it up just in time before, you know, the, you know, conference tournament starts. But, you know, John Carroll led by guards, Tyson Commander, you know, Janot Basima, you know, they led the Patriots to an 80-70 overtime win over Archbishop Spalding, you know, who were without senior forward and Villanova commit and McDonald's All-American Cam Whitmore. You know, Commander led all scores with 26 points, and Basima was right behind him with 23 points. CJ Scott led Spalding with 18, while point guard Ty Peterson added 14 points. You know, Spalding came out strong. You know, they used pressure defense and traps, you know, to kind of suffocate, you know, John Carroll's guards and make them make quick decisions to see if they can force turnovers, and they did. You know, they forced a few turnovers, got out of the ring, got some easy baskets, and they took a 19-9 lead at the end of the first quarter. You know, John Carroll settled down, and they got it going offensively. And, you know, the second quarter behind, you know, point guard Terry Long Jr., who scored 7 of the Patriots' 19 points in the quarter to tie the game at 28 at the half. John Carroll held Spalding to 9 points in the second quarter. In the second half, it was a back-and-forth affair. We needed a team able to seize momentum. You know, Spalding had chances to close the game late in the fourth, but they couldn't make free throws. They shot 9-17 from the line in the fourth overall in the fourth quarter just by alone. You know, had they made their free throws, they would have won the game. Just as simple as that. John Carroll shot 3 or 4 late to stay close. And Basima's lay-in with 10 seconds left tied the game at 62 and forced overtime. You know, overtime, it was all John Carroll. They outscored Spalding 18-8 to pull out a tough road win. You know, John Carroll improved to 15-8, you know, 6-4 in the Baltimore Catholic League Conference, obviously, and Spalding fell to 20-5 overall and 7-3 in the BCL. John Carroll faces McDonough Wednesday at 6 p.m. while Spalding hosts Glendale Country Wednesday at 7 p.m.
All right, we're going to take our first break. When we get back, Raymond's going to let y'all know what's going on with the Washington Wizards. And, you know, if you've been busy today, been away from social media, there's been quite a bit of news outside of what they've normally been up to as of late. So we're going to take our first break when we get back. Ray's going to let y'all know what's going on with the Wizards. If you're a Wizards fan at this moment watching, I'm not going to get mad at you if you take a step away. I get it. It's been a long month, maybe possibly a long season for you. That's it. Take our first break when we get back. Ray got you guys covered with the latest on the Wizards. You're watching the Focus TV. Welcome back to the Focus TV, as promised. Raymond's going to let y'all know what's going on with your Washington Wizards. Floor is yours, Ray.
The tailspin continues, man. They suffered an embarrassing loss to Miami Heat last night, 121-100. You know, you can check out our Wizards Outlook for our thoughts on that game. But, you know, overall, man, they're just in utter chaos at the moment. It's no cohesiveness. It's no trust. And it shows on the court, on both ends. You know, they're just not a team at this point. It's really just a collection of bodies. And, you know, you can tell by some of the players' comments and post game that is very much a every man for himself mentality right now, you know, with the trade deadline looming. And it's just a bit of uncertainty in the air for the team. And it's affecting their play, you know, and even, you know, even once the dust settles from whatever may happen on the trade front, unless a certain move is made, there's still going to be some uncertainty, you know, regarding that player's commitment. You know, and said player is Bradley Beal, which, you know, he's a topic of discussion right now because he will be undergoing season-ending surgery on his left wrist. So yeah, it is unlikely that he's going to be moved at this point. But yeah, it's not a good situation right now for the Wizards. You know, they gave us some hope at the beginning of the season, but that died out quickly, man. It started, you know, with the slide in December, and they just never been able to regain their footing since then. There have been flashes here and there. You know, not too long ago, they had a tough win against Philly, but you know, outside a couple moments, it's been dismal, you know, for the last couple months. So yeah, man, they're in a tough spot. And it doesn't look like it's going to be ending anytime soon, but you know, hopefully those guys can get it together. You know, who knows what's going on in that locker room, but you know, it's going to be a long rest of the season. I'm pretty sure they're looking forward to this upcoming All-Star break. On a more semi-pleasant news, the Go-Go, they recently split a two-game homestand against the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. They won last Wednesday, then fell to them last Friday. You know, it's been pretty much the same story for them every game. They're going to have balanced scoring. They're going to dominate in the paint, and unfortunately, they're going to turn the ball over. You know, they had 21 turnovers in both games. You know, luckily in last Wednesday's game, they were able to shoot a little bit better, which you know, led them to the win. But yeah, they got to get those turnovers under control. It hinders them in a lot of ways. Luckily, they're able to offset that. You know, because like I talked about last week, they control the boards and they're efficient and they score a lot inside the paint. You know, when they're not shooting a lot of threes, it doesn't give the other team opportunity to get out and run, but they're turning the ball over. So that just gives the other team more opportunities. If they can cut down those turnovers with the way they're able to control the game in other areas, they'd be in a much better space. But, you know, they're continuously progressing, man. Isaiah Todd had his second double-double of the season. Jaime Ekanike continues to play well. Cassius Winston starting to come around. You know, he's had a tough go at it this season. But in these two games against Fort Wayne, man, they just didn't have an answer for Justin Anderson. He had 31 points in both games, you know, pretty much doing it in a myriad of ways, you know. So yeah, he just had his way with them. He might be one of those players that, you know, gets happy when he sees the go-go on the schedule. But you know, overall, not a bad showing in either game. You know, like I said, really the only bad spot is the turnovers. You know, they shoot the ball pretty well. They rebound, they defend. They just got to stop giving other teams more opportunities to score on them, you know, because eventually, you know, no matter how good defense you're playing, if you're continuously giving the team the ball, it's going to wear down at some point. It'll catch up to you, and that's what happened to them in the second game. But they'll be back in action tomorrow night. This game will also be at home. So yeah, man. Hopefully they'll rebound and get back on the winning track.
All right, then transition over to the college side of the game. Cardo, what's happening with GW?
Yeah, it was actually a great game on, you know, Saturday. It was a classic. A-10 conference battle. But it was a tale of two halves for two players in GW, James Bishop, and Davidson's Luka Brockovic. GW was locked in, you know, for their first place matchup with Davidson. There's no other way to put it. They came out in the first half, led by junior guard James Bishop. I mean, when I say on fire, I mean ridiculously on fire. GW shot 14 of 28 in the opening 20 minutes. That includes 7 of 14 from 3 and 7 of 7 from the line. James Bishop scored 19 points in the first 11 minutes of the game and went into the locker room with 21 points at halftime after knocking down 5 of 7 threes, with GW up 42-34 with Davidson at the half. In the beginning of the second half, Davidson showed why they are in first place in the conference. They erased the 8-point halftime deficit with a 15-5 run to begin the second half in the first to play to take a 49-47 lead. Behind the inside play to 6-10, like I said, forward Luka Brockovic. David extended his run over GW to 24-10 in the second half, holding a 58-52 lead with 11-29 left to play. From there, it was a battle of wills. You know, they just went back and forth. Bishop and, you know, high-flying guard Joe Bamisil, you know, they carried the scoring load for GW, and Brockovic carried the offensive load for Davidson. Bamisil tied the game at 73 with 204 remaining. However, Brockovic was too much in the second half and in the final minute, finishing the Colonels with the 3-point play, you know, to help the Wildcats escape with a 78-73 win. James Bishop finished with 26 points for the Colonials, while Joe Bamisil added 19 points. Brockovic had a career high 30 points to pace Davidson, while Foster Lawyer posted 16 points and Sam Minigan added 11 points a minute ago. My fault. GW fell to 8-8 and 13 overall, 4-5 and 8-10 play, while Davidson improved to 19-3 overall, 9-1 and 8-10 play. GW will face UMass Wednesday at 7 p.m. And as for GW women's, they're 7-14. They will hit the road to battle 9-13 Duquesne Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Jeez, that's a big first half for Mr. Bishop.
Yeah, with that name, Brockovic.
Sound like he had a big second half.
Nah, he the truth, man. Yeah. he gonna get a lot of looks. For people that don't know, yeah, that's Steph Curry's alma mater and his coach, so he knows what he's doing. So
Davidson sending another one to the league. So
he got a shot because he hit threes. He's strong on the block.
He said he's 6'10".
6'10", but he can move. He can shoot threes, post up, mid-range, can pass. He got to be able to defend at 16. He got to be able to defend the Giannis's and the 80s. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one can stop him, but he got to at least be in front, be there, though. like
bump him at something.
Can't be just watching him dunk all day, and that's what we got to prove. So we're going to see, but he definitely going to get some looks for sure, without a doubt.
Shout out to the A-10 once again, continuing to pump talent into the NBA. How about that? All right, for Maryland, it was a busy week for the Terps. They took on Michigan State last Thursday on the road. They were able to hold Sparty off 67-62. They lost the services of point guard Ashley Owusu in the second quarter of that game to an ankle injury. Big night from Angel Reese. She had 25 points and 9 rebounds. Diamond Miller added 14 and 9 boards. While Cheyenne Sellers did a little bit of everything, with her increased time on the court due to Owusu not finishing the contest. Maryland had to withstand a second-half barrage from DMV native Nia Clouden to leave with the W. Clouden finished with 22 points. It felt like 15 of them came in one stretch in the second half, where she just got dumb hot from three. Maryland was trying to pull away, and she was just like, nah, I'm not going. Just I'm not going. She closed the third quarter. Diamond Miller's long is all outside, right? She's leading to the left, falling out of bounds, goes glass to cut the lead, like to bring her team within 6 at the end of the third quarter, just to top off a very hot third quarter that she had. But what's important is Maryland got the win. Sunday, the Terps had senior day. They honored their seniors by playing their best defensive half of the season. They held Nebraska to 29% shooting from the floor in the first quarter. All right, it's a pretty good number, right? I'm going to raise that number just a little bit. They held them to 13% shooting from the floor in the second quarter. Yeah, 13. That allowed Maryland to jump out to a 20-point lead at the half. While the Cornhuskers got their offense flowing a bit in the second half, we all know we get to see this up close a lot from the men's team that we watch. You go down a certain amount, you can't climb back out of a hole when you don't get stops. And Nebraska spent the second half, just exchanging buckets with Maryland. You down 20 already. Jason Baskets is not going to help without getting stops. The Terps had a balanced effort offensively, led by Chloe Bibby's 21 points. Reese had 15 points and 16 rebounds. Ty Kozlova had a huge impact on this game. If you look at the box score, you're like, oh, she didn't really do too much. 2 points, 2 steals. But with Maryland being so short-handed, with Faith Masonis out for the year, Ashley injuries I just mentioned, she's kind of like the extra guard, the only extra guard that's healthy and available to be in the game. Cheyenne Sellers is asked to take on an increased role. So I think Angel and Cheyenne picked up a foul. And Brenda's been managing this all year. When someone picks up any of the main players, get a foul, you got to go to the bench because you got to manage you to get you through the whole game. Ty came on and she played a big role in that first half, them being just strapping defensively. She did a really good job. It was happy to see her have that type of impact. But if you want to check out the full recap, head to thefocustv.com. Up next, Maryland hosts Wisconsin on Wednesday night, and it's Shanice Lewis bobblehead night. So, guys, stop by the game. Got a bobblehead to take in. I think Chloe Bibby had her bobblehead night. I think it was on senior night or senior day, rather. So it's pretty cool. Also, just wanted to share, I didn't have BC United news until they made news today because they've been busy. I told you all they've been adding people continually and shuffling the deck roster-wise. Today, the Black and Red signed Ecuadorian forward Michael Estrada on a season-long loan from Liga MX side. Deportivo Toluca FC. DC United will have an option for a permanent transfer for Estrada following the conclusion of his loan at the end of the 2022 MLS season. This just a quote wanted to share from DC United president of soccer operations, Dave Casper. Bolstering our attack has been a priority for us in the offseason. We've been closely monitoring the possibility of bringing Michael to the club. He's a dangerous number 9 who we will believe will be a great addition to our attacking unit, and we're excited to get him on loan for the 2022 season. Up next, we got our second break. When we get back, Cardell got some USA basketball for you, and then we'll get in a little bit of rapid fire. Still got some time, so can only imagine what he has for us in rapid fire, because sports been acting up, especially the last 48 hours. Like, today's been nuts. Every time I think, like, it's going to be a chill period, y'all on Twitter, you get an email, something happens, and we're right back in it. Like, I'm going through my notes today, and then, like, what, life post 2 p.m. happened today? And, who knows what's going to happen tonight. But you're watching the Focus TV. We're going to take our second break. When we get back, USA women's basketball. Welcome back to the Focus TV. As promised, USA women's basketball. Cardell, what's been going on? Got a lot going on, upcoming, rather, in the city.
Yeah, for the women's and men's, FIBA World Cup qualifying tournament will be here in D.C. Right now for the women's, it will take place February 10th to the 12th. They just literally over the weekend had their training camp to kind of finalize their rosters or whatnot, and selected 12 players. And, some notable names, obviously, but really – all the names no one should be surprised about. The players that made the list, obviously, probably no-brainer, Jewel Lloyd from the Seattle Storm, Kelsey Plum from the Las Vegas Aces, Ariel Atkins from the Mystics, Stephanie Dolson from the New York Liberty, recently signed to the New York Liberty, Alicia Gray from the Dallas Wings, and Chelsea Gray from the Las Vegas Aces. Also selected were Natasha Howard from the New York Liberty, Brianna Jones from the Connecticut Sun, Kayla McBride from the Minnesota Lynx, Kelsey Mitchell from the Indiana Fever, and De'Erica Hamby from Las Vegas, and Alyssa Thomas from the Connecticut Sun. The World Cup qualifying tournament will be played at Entertainment Sports Arena, ESA, for sure, for those that live in the DMV. They will feature in games against Belgium and Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico will play Belgium on February 10th at 4:30 p.m. USA will play Belgium 6:30 February 11th. And the tournament concludes with USA versus Puerto Rico February 12th at 4:30 p.m. Moving straight to rapid fire. We have quite a few questions to get to. Everybody know this is the 75th anniversary of the NBA. You know, they named it top 75 players. Some people agree with the list, others didn't. But, you know, it hasn't got the same notoriety, same buzz. But they also, the NBA also named his top 15 coaches of all time. And here is the list. Lenny Wilkins, Red Auerbach, Chuck Daly, Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, Larry Brown, Red Holzman, Casey Jones, Don Nelson, Jack Ramsey, Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich, Doc Rivers, Jerry Sloan, and Eric Spoelstra. Just what are your thoughts on this list? Are there some names that you feel should be added or taken off the list? We're going to start with you, Octavia.
I started listening like at the beginning of the game tonight, so I didn't hear all the names until you just said it. I mean, these lists to me are always subjective. I feel like it's never going to be perfect for somebody. The names that they listed to me are all, to me, noteworthy. I know some people, I don't know who specifically, but I feel like some people would probably say, like, I don't know about Eric Spoelstra or something like that, which to me is still crazy because, I mean, Eric Spoelstra has been around for a very, very, very long time. But I feel like, you know, he probably doesn't get the just due from casual fans. But I mean, all in all, like, I'm not really surprised at who's on there. I'm trying to think, cause like I said, I literally just heard all of them. I'm trying to think who would have been left off that I just haven't thought about.
I mean, some people were saying like George Karl.
That's a good one. That's a good one. George Karl. Yeah. Cause I was waiting for you to say Popovich. I was like, I know they have to say Popovich, right?
Oh, he's on the list. Yeah,
I'm trying to think who else. Like I can't think of coach.
Somebody threw out Rick Adelman. He won a lot of games. I don't think he won a championship, but he's won a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be around close to 900,000 wins, honestly, to make that list. Some people were saying Steve Kerr. You know, is he really on? I mean, we all know the Warriors pretty much been a dynasty and stuff like that. But some were saying he don't have enough wins in his short stint with the Warriors, but. I mean, it ain't about always the wins, it's the damage you do. I'm like, championships mm-hmm. matter. That's a lot of wins when you got to win a championship, man. It's a lot of playoff wins, too. So I'm not really mad at the list, but, you know, maybe George Karl because he's won a lot of games.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's what's like, I couldn't think of who else I could think off the top of my head who would have been left off, but George Karl is a good one. Dang, it's been a long time, I feel like, since he coached.
Yeah. If you want to be real technical, I mean, hell, you could have put Bill Russell in there, you know, with his work he did as player coach later on, even, you know, Seattle kind of turning that thing around, had him in position and stuff like that. You mean, a little argument can be made with that. He won championships, so, it's not much. I'm not mad at the list at all, but, you know, George Karl kind of sticks out, but I don't think he's – I don't think he won a chip. And I think all these coaches, for the most part, I think they did. You know, like Lenny Wilkins, I think he got the one in Seattle, you know, which was, I think, right after Bill Russell built it up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's probably the only one. Ray, what you think?
Yeah, man, it's a pretty solid list. Like you said, man, the accomplishments – pretty much speak for themselves, you know, like George Karl and Rick Adelman were two names that, you know, that I thought could have got some consideration. But yeah, it's nothing. I don't think it's anything egregious. It's funny that Eric Spoelstra's name is on there because, you know, they claim a specific player has never had a good coach. You know, but
that's a great point.
The narrative messed up now. They can't use that.
But apparently, one of his coaches is one of the 15 greatest coaches ever. So, you know, who am I? I'm just a guy, man. I'm just a guy. but no, in all serious, man, like you said, Cardale, it's I got no beef with the list. You know, a lot of great names on there. You know, one guy's name on there that I don't think a lot of people now really understand the impact they had on the league is Don Nelson. Just what he's done in regards to, you know, people think the NBA changed 5 years ago. Don Nelson was doing this in the 80s, man. And then even in the early 90s with Run TMC, he had three guys averaging at least 20 points per game. You know, and if they were able to stay together a little bit longer, who knows what would have happened with that. You know, I just think he's definitely one of the most influential coaches ever. And then I think only recently he was the winningest coach in NBA history. I think didn't Popovich pass him a couple games ago? I'm not exactly sure. If he hasn't passed him yet, he's like extremely close.
Yeah.
So it's a very solid list. And you know, a lot of great coaches on there who coached a lot of great players and, you know, basically had a tremendous impact on the NBA.
All right, Wilson.
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much laid it all out there. But yeah, they did a way better job with this list than the players list. I was like away with the players list before I got even halfway through. I thought they did a good job. Obviously, you know, as you guys mentioned, some really good candidates. No list is going to be perfect. But yeah, it's kind of ironic that, you know, some of the folks that didn't play roles in the narratives of some people. I mean, honestly, we want to get too technical. Like, one of his coaches was on the staff of a couple of these coaches that made the list. Like, that's part of the same coaching tree. We want to get real technical. So, I mean, I'm happy that they celebrated some of the because some of the folks deserved some respect on their names because I'd have kind of been overlooked, depending on who you're a fan of and what you choose, you know, what part of reality you choose to just detach from and set aside and act like it doesn't matter. And, you know, it's crazy because we watched Spo at work. Well, look, literally last night. Yeah. Was that last night we watched Spo at work? Yeah, fitting. But, yeah, I think everyone's deserving. And I also think the guys, every coach that y'all brought up is definitely at least worth the conversation as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought they did a good job.
All right, let's move on, man. A lot of trade talk we got to get to, man. We're going to start with the hometown. Bradley Beal said he's disappointed that he would have to undergo wrist surgery and miss the rest of the season, basically due to a torn wrist that he suffered against Memphis. The Wizards say they tried – well, he said he tried to rehab it and tried to give it a week's time to be reevaluated, but they just saw right away that it was torn up and he would need surgery for it to properly heal. You know, like the quote is, despite the last 10 days of getting intensive treatment and rehab on my wrist, it became clear that I would not be able to compete to my standards or to the level that our team and our fans deserve. Bill said, I'm disappointed to have my season end this way, but we all agree that this was the best decision. I look forward to coming back at 100% and continue to lead this team as we work together to build toward the future. Bill suffered the injury in the third quarter of the Wizards, 115-95 loss to Memphis last month. Bill, three-time All-Star, these Wizards, and scoring 23.2 points per game and assists 6.6 per game. He's eligible to sign a five-year, $245 million contract with the Wizards this summer. Bill also has a $36.4 million player option on next season. I'll start with you, Ray. thoughts on the Wizards now that Bill is out, and if you're the GM, what do you do? Do you offer the max? Because it's near impossible to ship him now. He can't help a team. So, or do you play your cards for this summer? Do the play, you know, the opt-in and trade, or like Chris Paul? Like, it's a dire situation right now.
Man, honestly speaking, if it's me, I'm looking at the opt-in and trade scenario, to be perfectly honest. You know, of course, with this with the injury, it's nothing's going to happen by the deadline, which is on Thursday. So, yeah, that I think that's what you're looking at. You know, no offense to Bill at all, but to commit that supermax, I don't think that's you know, I don't think that's the best way to go. You know, because at that point, he's your top dog, and you're going to have to fill in the pieces behind him, you know, unless you truly in your heart believe that he's going to take you to the promised land as the number one option, then you can't give him that money. That's what that's for, you know? So I look at the opt-in and trade scenario to try to get him to a place where, you know, where he's going to be happy. Now for him personally, I don't think he gets that money, that 245, you know, because he hasn't displayed that's the level that he's on, you know. I would think if he's going to get it anywhere, he'd get it here. But yeah, man, it's just a tough spot to be in, and it sucks for him. It sucks for the franchise, you know, because he's been here a while now. And you know, it would be sad to see him leave on you know, on the downturn. But you know, the game is the game, man. And you know, you gotta run your business. And that's 245 is a lot for loyalty money, you know. So that's what I think that's the best case scenario at this point. You know, he opts in, he gets to 36, and then you try to move him and get what you can in return, and put yourself in a better position for the future. Personally for him, I don't know what's going through his mind. I'm sure this injury is weighing on him, because you know he's looking at that hefty payday, and it's probably dwindling right in front of him, you know. And it sucks, because I'm all for people getting their money, but I mean, you can't just expect people to do things that are bad for business, you know, and that's the bottom line. So I hope it works out the best it can for all parties involved. But yeah, if I'm in that seat, that's the scenario I'm looking at. Because of course he's not gonna leave $36 million on the table. So you have that conversation, you know, you go ahead and opt in, we'll try to move you, put you in the best situation as possible where we can get something back.
And just for, you know, more information on the opt-in scenario, Bill will potentially make $41.9 million next season if he opts in his player option plus its 15% trade bonus. Because of limitations on extensions after trades, Bill will have to wait 6 months to extend with his new team. He could then add 4 years starting at the 2023-24 max, projected at $43.7 million for a total of $228 million over 5 years, which can increase if the 23-24 cap comes in higher than expected. So, you know, he pretty much would be giving up, if he opt in, was 17 mil. You know what I'm saying? So, depending on what team he want to go to. So, yeah, he got a tough decision to make. But as some GMs say, like, I don't think your lifestyle changes, you know what I'm saying, from making 228 mil compared to 245. It's all the same. So, we're going to go. Wilson got the petty smirk on, so go ahead.
Man, I'm over here trying to be as mature as I can. Yeah, there's one option. You opted in trade. The only blessing here is having watched a similar scenario happen with the NFL team I root for, where you have a guy, you know, you clearly moved on from. But, you know, you want their value to be high enough to move them. It's a little bit different. Brad's, you know, but either way, bottom line is you got a player. They're not quite at the level you would like them to be at, per se, to give them that type of bread or security, whatever you would like for your franchise. We've had this conversation numerous times. We've answered these questions numerous times. With his outlook, yeah, you opt in and trade, man. It is what it is. It's done. You should have did this before the year started. At least you can recoup something. If it's me, you got, what, 24 hours before another 24 hours? 30-some hours before the trade deadline. Take all the vets here, see what you can get. Let the rest of the kids play the year out. Get some people here. Want to be here. Listen to Coach West. Go forward. Get to next year. Opt in, trade. Get me stuff back. See where the people that missed out on the trade deadline, someone might want a Brad. They might feel like they're a Brad away from a chip. Cool. That's their business. That's on them. But yeah, for Washington, nah, dude, you have to go forward. This whole thing's been bad. Like, the whole – since they traded John, it's been an ugly domino. Right? I'm gonna say it. It's fine. People feel how they want to feel. You had 10 years of at least knowing for sure that they were gonna go out there and they were gonna compete. That is long since passed. So it's on Washington. If they want to go ahead and re-up with that man, I'm not gonna get mad at anybody. If Brad's offered 245, I'm not telling him to decline it. But if you're Washington and you had an opportunity for this to play out and you still do it, that's on you. But if it's me, I guess what you're asking, I opt in, trade, move on with my life, enjoy my lottery pick I'm going to get for the rest of how this year is going to go. And that's it. That's just me.
Octavia?
Yeah, what they said. Because, I mean, the best ability is availability. And he ain't been available consistently enough in the last couple of years. I literally found a list of just all of the injuries he's had over the last couple of years. Granted, all of them haven't been, you know, season ending or anything like that, but he's been pretty accident prone or injury prone over the last couple of years. So as a franchise, I wouldn't be able to trust to give a max player $245 million and not know if he's going to be here. I just can't, because the track record right now just shows that I don't know what it is. Unfortunately, it happens to certain players where their durability becomes in question, and it can also mess with what you got going on forward. But yeah, I would definitely do the opt-in and trade, because it's just not getting any better. You know, I don't know how many times he's had a season-ending surgery. I feel like it's been a lot. I know I'm probably stretching it, but it seems like it's been something. I know he had the hamstring injury. You know, now we have a rest, and it's just like I wouldn't be able to trust it. And as much as they love him at the franchise, I think that's probably going to be the only Achilles heel of what they'll decide to do, if they're going to lead with their heart or if they're going to lead with their bank account, as far as a franchise, to figure out what's going to happen forward with Bradley Beal. But I think it's time, because we've talked about it in the past about blowing it all up and starting all over. And I mean, at this point, I don't think they have to blow it fully up, because they were lucky enough to get some decent pieces last year where they could try to build around that. But I think it's about time to move on from the Brad Beal situation.
Yeah, for me, 245, that's only reserved for, you know, like the LeBrons, the KDs, the like players like that. It ain't but like five or six of them. Anybody else don't even – for me personally, I don't even say two, nothing.
I mean, I don't even say $20.
I'm not even sure you still say one something. Like, I'm like, no, you need Bertans money, because it's like you don't move the needle.
Yeah.
Like, you put them on any team, that's playoffs, you know, at minimum. Or LeBron, like, shit. But it was going on, like, that's a whole different story. But normally in his career, you know what I mean? He gets you there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then you just gotta be real. Let's say you do offer and he take it. Is it really going? Now you really strapped. You can't make more. Like, this is what you got for the next 4 or 5 years, though. And then when that's over, he's out of his prime. So you can't even move him for the same value. It is what it is. Like, it's nothing. It's nothing you could do, man. And, yeah, they in a bad spot. And, you know, Wilson touched on this. It's a little karma involved, because you had the franchise guy. You threw him out the door like he was a 12th man that just couldn't stay out the news. You know what I'm saying? You just wilding. Like, give him the proper respect, because now the rest of the league saw how you treated him. And I'm pretty sure if Tommy's on the phone trying to make trades, they like, nah. You know, players like, you can trade me, but I'm not going. They're jamming everything up because of how you treated him. You know what I'm saying? And then you don't have much flexibility anyway, because you got Thomas Bryant, who's 100. You know what I'm saying? Kuz got a bag. You know, Dinwiddie got a little money. You just re-signed Gaffer for a bag. You know what I'm saying? Then you got the dude y'all thought was Peja Stojakovic, who's getting $80 million, and he can't hit nothing. You know what I'm saying? Can't be getting the game. You know what I'm saying? So it's just bad. You just got a lot of bad contracts on this roster, and they can't live up to those contracts. And, you know, I know y'all tell you, like, trade build and try to build around these other pieces, man. Like, honestly, they just need to go young. Because, think about it. KCP and Kuz and them, they ain't getting no younger, man. They ain't trying to be here for this full
That's true.
Like, nah, dog. You know, they trying to get back where they can try to win. They used to win it. You know what I'm saying? So
That's true.
Build around the youngsters, you know what I'm saying? Rui, Denny, if you think he got between the kiss, like, you got Thomas Brown, like, build around, you got to build around the youngest and hope that some of those guys develop and attract free agents, you know what I'm saying? And Ted just going to bite the bullet. You know, I know it sucks because everybody done lost money during the pandemic, but you about to lose a lot more because you ain't going to crowd where people won't want to come to the games. Hell, it's already the opposing team's gym when they come anyway. Like, it's bad in there, you know? So, but at least you got some young talent where they will be open to learning and you give Wes Unseld a chance to actually coach. Mm-hmm. These guys don't, you can tell they don't really respect him, man. They just, they tune them out doing what they got to do. So, like, I guarantee you a lot of guys are at home praying that they get traded. Let's keep it with a buck, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's always that other side. So, yeah, I'm with y'all, man. You know, opt in and get them about out of here this summer. And Ray, I ain't going to lie, dog. I wouldn't even really care about his feelings, man. Like, I'm gonna do his best for our franchise. You get in the bag, Slim. That's your thing. That'll make you feel better. Go to therapy, brother. But I you no longer my concern, man. Like, nah, bro. Like, it is what it is. It's just, it's business. You know what I'm saying? It's grown man business. Man. Yeah. You can't handle it. Don't be in the NBA. Go get another career. So, nah, they got, because see what happens. And then you got to look at it from this standpoint. If you're a GM, you Tommy Shoes. If you don't, you look, he messed up. He messed up on a lot of moves. It didn't work out. So if you mess up on his next move, you may not be employed to continue. So I'm going to mess up feeding my ability to feed my family. Oh, no, nah, Bill, you good. You got 200. You be all right. Go see Inyala, get some therapy. You be fine.
Nah, young.
What you got to do, but I got to make sure I'm straight. I got to make sure we straight, man. And that's how you got to do it. So. But at the same time, with the young pieces that they have across the league, like, who are you going to really get for him that's going to move the needle in return, like, right now? And that's why we're going to get to it probably soon. That next CBA going to be mean. Because I think the owners are fed up. Because there's a lot of overpaid.
Oh, yeah, they real mad.
Come on, dog. There's a lot of players that are seriously overpaid. And it's just like, dog.
Yeah, that dude in Philly ain't making no better either.
Dog. Yeah, and he gonna be the poster child, but this really started way before him. Like, this ain't even, like, really, to me, James Harden's situation is worse than what Ben did. Because he literally just said, I want to get traded. I'm just gonna be fat. I ain't gonna work out. I'm gonna be in the strip club, getting fat, eating wings, doing what I do. And can't, dog, that's bad. That's totally unprofessional. Like, at least Ben was disrespected. I can understand why he's like, fuck them, man. You know what I'm saying? But That's totally unprofessional. So I think Ben's just gonna be, they're gonna use Ben as an example, but yeah,
this is the most recent, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's bad, so it is what it is, man. But yeah, they gotta do his best for the Wizards before DC riot. They be climbing the Capitol One instead of the Capitol.
Wanna thank y'all for spending time with us this week. We truly appreciate it. We'll see y'all next week for season 5, episode 15. We're moving right along. It's season 5, and y'all know we're going to have more stuff to talk about because it's trade deadline, like y'all said. We still got another – we got till Thursday, man. We have no idea what these crazy people around this league are going to do because there's like 4 functional franchises, and everybody else, anything's possible. Anything is possible. You got a bunch of people trying to save their jobs, other people actively working to lose their jobs while trying to do right. It's a lot of stuff about to happen. Don't forget to check in with us with Wizards Outlook. Keep you guys updated. We continue to go through the season. Follow Focus TV on all social media mediums. Wednesdays, Roku channel, Roku television or device, add us to Focus TV. Friday nights, 10 p.m., DC TV. Get to dctv.org if you live outside the city. And we'll see y'all next week.